Thank you, Matt. So I'm going to stick with magnolia and, in fact, go to a species that's even nearer and dearer to Gary's heart than the one he talked about, and that's Magnolia ashii. I'm going to talk about the work that we're doing at the National Arboretum to develop strategies, actually in close collaboration with Gary, to help preserve this species. So Magnolia ashii is a small understory tree or shrub that is a deciduous plant that's native to the Florida Panhandle. It's planted actually in the landscape. It's known as a landscape tree, and it's favored because it has these huge 1 to 2 foot leaves that really give a coarse texture to the landscape. It's relatively small size, stature, and also it has a very short juvenility period of like 2 to 3 years. It'll go from seed to flower. So it's really amenable for nursery production. As I said, though, even though it's planted in a lot of areas in the U.S., as a horticultural plant, it's endemic to just a very small region in the panhandle of Florida, from Tallahassee to Pensacola. And in fact, it's listed on the red list of Magnoliaceae that Gary talked about. It's listed as vulnerable, and the state of Florida lists it as endangered. There are only, as we can tell, 9 populations, and these range in size from just a few plants to a few or have over 100 plants. But they're all threatened by some of the issues that were talked about in our first talk, with things like pollution, things like even recreation, habitat destruction. So our goal was to evaluate the genetic diversity of these wild native populations so that that could help us guide decisions on how to conserve the species, instead of just sort of randomly picking seeds, to really focus on capturing the allelic diversity. So our methods were, we first went down to Florida, and these are actually the two co-authors on this. Kevin Conrad really is the one, he's the one in the hat with pressing the plants. He was really kind of the passion behind this. It was really his project who took the lead on it. And then Chris von Kahn was the one who developed all the molecular markers for it. So they went down to Florida and collected leaf material and also vouchered from the 11 populations that we knew. And this just is a quick graph to show. So we had 11 populations. We also looked at 14 cultivated plants that we got from either botanic gardens or from nurseries. And we also used a related species that may be the same species, Magnolia macrophylla. We extracted DNA from all these, and then this just shows where the close-up of the panhandle area, the populations we collected from. We extracted DNA from these, and our intent was to use SSR markers that had been published and developed for other Magnolia species. But we found when we did that there were some problems with those amplifying in Magnolia ashii. There were these various, if you do molecular, these are some of the things we saw. So we found it was actually just as easy with today's, you know, sequencing technology to just go ahead and develop our own set of markers specific for Magnolia ashii. And so that's what Chris did. He ended up with 64 primers that he developed, and then we ended up using 18 of those to assess the population diversity. So we found, of those 18 primers, we used 72 alleles from these Magnolia ashii samples, and we used those markers to analyze the data using structure analysis and UPGMA analysis. So structure analysis is an appropriate method for this, because they actually are interbreeding populations. And so what structure does is it takes all your data and it tells you how many distinct populations it sees in the whole data. So from all those populations we looked at, those 11 across the panhandle, it found two large groups, what it calls populations. And those roughly were divided by western and eastern half of the state. So we further subdivided, though, each big population we could divide it into smaller subpopulations if we felt like. And one thing to notice here is the on the top graph, the far left, the yellow thing is the population from the Holmes Creek area. And that's significant, you'll see in a minute, because it was a very diverse group in when we did UPGMA analysis. So this is basically just a tree that measures genetic diversity or genetic distance among the populations that we looked at. And they grouped out similar to the way the structure analysis did, with the exception, though, that Holmes Creek was kind of kicked out as its own group, even further away than the Magnolia macrophylla populations or samples. So what this shows basically is sort of three major populations that we would focus on for if we were going to do conservation. So our next steps, basically, we found that the current populations are generally stable, healthy, and well distributed. So if you went to Peter Crane's talk yesterday, one of the things he said was that conserving the plants in place is really the ideal way. So that's what I think we should focus on with these, is trying to stop things that are causing habitat destruction and habitat loss. However, though, seedling recruitment at a lot of these sites was low. So that is, even though the populations, the trees look healthy and great, there's not a lot of new trees coming along. So, and I just was talking to Gary, and he said that there's actually seed predation by insects that is one of the contributing factors. There may be loss of pollinators. So these populations are not going to last forever. There may also be overcollection of seeds even by nursery people, because it is a great crop to grow. So, as I said, habitat preservation and controlled pollinations to help to maintain the diversity could be, hopefully would be the primary method of conservation. But as a backup, we recommend establishing seed orchards, and we could do this using some of the botanic gardens and the plant collections network that Gary mentioned. But this wouldn't be that hard, because we talked to Sean Hoban at the Morton Arboretum, who is actually a population geneticist. I have to give the caveat that Kevin, Chris, and I are not population biologists. We're geneticists or horticulturists. So he looked at our data, and he found that you could have 24 individuals would capture, if you sample those randomly from the whole population, you could capture 95% of the allelic diversity in that. So that's not a lot to have to plant 24 Magnolia ashii either together so they could interbreed, or even just at different gardens you could capture that genetic diversity. And also the fact that this, where horticulture can come in, is that you can have public gardens and even nurseries to help with this. So what we can do is use the information that we garnered from this, a relatively simple SSR diversity analysis that really didn't take a lot of resources, it doesn't take a lot of money to develop these. Once you have that data, you can then make really deliberate efforts at how to conserve it, and using the help of not only botanic gardens, but in this case, because it is a nursery plant, helping the nursery to make sure that they're planting that's really representing the broad diversity of it. We found that in our study that the cultivated plants that we analyzed were diverse, but they certainly didn't represent all of the populations that we sampled. So just having the nursery industry make sure that they're planting plants from all those provenances could do a lot towards conserving this plant in situ, maybe not in its native habitat, but certainly conserving the plants. And with that, we might have a couple of questions.
Time for one question.
Awesome. Question? Sorry. He was first.
Does the Holmes Creek have different morphology from the other groups, and is it possible to use seeds?
Interesting. So he asked whether the Holmes Creek, the one that was different, had different morphology. It didn't. Not that the collectors saw. So I don't think it would be characterized as a new species, but it looked the same. So. Yeah, and we're talking before that you have to remember these are SSR markers, so they may not be the best for analyzing, you know, diversity of species. Some kind of sequence-based technology might be better if you're really trying to look at whether these are, you know, the taxonomic issues associated with it.
Thank you very much. All right, well, thank you for not running out of the room for the discussion part of this. Oh, we got one runner. I knew that would happen. But so we have 10 minutes, right? And so the one of the goals of this workshop is to, you know, put together a list of action items to get, you know, ASHS as a society and the horticulture community more involved and more engaged to support plant conservation. And so, the question for this 10-minute discussion is, what are the primary barriers that need to be overcome to get more support from ASHS as a society for plant conservation? So I'm going to sit here, and I'm going to take notes, and I really just want to hear from the group on what your thoughts are for this. Ryan?
It's not exactly involved in what can ASHS do, or what can we do to get more support from ASHS for that, but as I'm listening to Margaret talk, something we did not discuss at the Woody Landscape Plant Crop Germplasm Committee, we talked a lot about the role of the PCN, MPGS, and working together, but being more deliberate, so can we take those red listed species, some of those Magnoliaceae, and be very, as she stated, very deliberate with, if they are red listed, we need to have these seed orchards so that people aren't going into collecting from the wild. So I don't know if that's been something that's been discussed between the PCN and MPGS, aside from the Woody Landscape Plant Crop Germplasm Committee. Maybe Margaret can speak to that.
I was thinking along this, also getting the nursery industry and the issues that PCN involved in some of this, because we sort of think of botanic gardens as where we conserve plants, that's where we do plant conservation, but I think the nursery industry has an increasingly good marketing opportunity even to say, hey, this is a, they wouldn't use the word provenance, but they can market it to say, this is part of this threatened species that if you plant this in your garden or
I think Richard made a great point yesterday in how do you define conservation, and if you can take one endangered species and outcross it with a very common species that's not endangered, and you get this hybrid, but it's not naturally occurring hybrid, is that hybrid doing something to contribute to plant conservation? And I'm not aware of too many examples in the nursery trade where this has occurred. I think one example I can give is that at Longwood, one of the plants we're breeding with is Camellia azalea, which is endangered, and we've crossed it with some very common Camellia japonicas, and we have a lot of these hybrids. And so is that conservation? I think it is, but, and can you use it as a marketing tool for when you're developing plants and trying to get the public to purchase them?
And I think right now the conservation groups, are somewhat different than the horticultural groups and even some of the botanic groups. We tend to focus, at least in USDA, more on our stakeholders being the nursery industry. And we're not so much focused, there's a whole other group of conservationists who maybe aren't interacting as much, and even in this society, maybe there aren't so many that are strict, purely conservationist land manager type people who aren't even
I think we should really shift this idea. I've got an example. We got seed of Betula chichibuensis, which is a highly endangered red listed bird species. And I collected a few hundred thousand seed and basically contacted every garden that I could think of. And about 70% of them, maybe not quite that high, 60%, just said no thanks because it was from index seminum. And even though it's a red listed bird species, it wasn't pure enough for them. And so, that to me is preposterous. This is a species that's got a tiny little range left. There's, I don't know how many trees, but not many. So I absolutely think anything we can do to change the idea that conservation has to be this very purified thing where you have to go to the mountaintop and get it, and it can only be that and never have seen a garden, it's just silly. But I'm coming at it from, I want to maintain a wheel in genetics.
We're not giving the nursery industry enough credit because I'm from Tennessee and I know we have nurseries that specialize in native plant material and that is their calling card. And so I imagine some of those people would be very engaged in helping to market plants that, per se, are endangered in the conservation program.
I mean, and I also see this happening with when you get more into perennial plants. You know, native plants are definitely hot market items right now. You know, North Creek Nursery, which is close to us, I mean, business is booming for them because they were in the native plant market a long time before it became popular. And so, I mean, just their sales and growth that I've seen over the past few years is just telltale of that people are paying attention. The consumer does want to buy plants that provide ecosystem services and are conserving plants. And so I think there's also an opportunity for this society to kind of latch on to that.